you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
The ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark! You can't put it on the board! Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
You're listening to the 200th episode of the White Sox Talk Podcast, coming to you from Sox Fest. Chuck Garfine here with Ryan McGuffey and our very special guest, Michael Kopech.
Glad to be on. Especially 200, that seems special.
Well, you're special.
Well, thank you.
Well, this is how this all started. So we did our little podcast in December, where fans took over the podcast. If you asked a question, you would automatically qualify to be on the podcast, potentially, with your question. You asked us a question. What was your question?
If I could be on. So I made it on.
You made it on. And not only did you make it on, we picked your question out of a hat.
You won a prize.
And you won a prize.
I won a prize.
This is the onesie.
Yeah. I'm putting this on as soon as we're done. I'll wear it for the rest of the day. Oh, you want me to wear it now?
What do you think?
All right. Oh, here we go.
Okay, so this is a podcast. So, Ryan, you want to describe what's going on here?
Yeah. So, Michael's opening. It's an extra large. And, yeah, I don't that'll be part of the challenge. This is where the podcast needs the video element, which luckily we are. This is called Tease.
This will eventually will get
media.
Out.
This is fun.
So he's putting on.
Not only did so he asked to be on the podcast, but he did say I would rock the onesie. You are a man of your word.
I'll wear it for the rest of the day.
You're a man of your word. Luckily, it was an extra large. I don't even know.
That's fine. It's cold outside.
He can wear this outside and he'll be warm in this freezing cold, frigid Chicago weather.
It looks like it's gonna fit.
It's a little snug.
It works. I mean. It's not uncomfortable.
You know what? It's one size fits all, even for Michael Kopech.
That is awesome. All right. Yes.
Yeah. I'm settled in for the rest
this
of the day.
This is awesome.
Now.
Hood's up. The hood is up.
You know, the onesie doesn't look good on everybody. It fits you.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is good.
I think this should be a qualified uniform for us.
White Sox onesie day.
Yeah. We'll talk to Brooks Boyer about getting this done. I think it's a done deal.
You also have a beard going on here.
That was another social media element.
Yeah. I decided, you know, I got a year off. I'm gonna play with things and figure out, you know, who I am. And I think the beard is part of me experimenting with who I'm gonna become. I don't know if it's gonna stick or not. Some fans seem to like it. I've been told I look terrible with it as well, though.
Whoa.
So it may be gone soon.
You got a little bit of a shaggy thing going from Scooby-Doo, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's not quite as full as I would like it. There's some patchiness in here.
So I believe. I did see the Insta story that you had. Should I keep the beard? And it was 52-48-ish. Were you going with the fans regardless?
Yeah. So I was. If I was, you know, a clear favorite for me to shave, this wouldn't be here right now. but it was like, I think it was actually 51-49.
Okay.
It was pretty close. So yeah, I decided to hold on to it for a little while, but. You know, I got some mixed responses about it for sure.
But do you like it? Does it feel okay?
No, it's terrible.
Then I don't know if it's going to really last.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see how it is when I'm throwing. That's the main thing.
Yes.
That'll be the deciding factor. If I'm throwing and I don't like how the sweat's dripping into my lip or whatever, then it's going to be gone.
Okay, so when can you start throwing? How far out are you?
In a couple weeks. I think the beginning of February. I'm at a point where I'm able to do everything but throw. So I'm really close to where I want to be. I would obviously like to be on a mound pitching, and that's not going to happen for a little while. But I start throwing soon. That's the exciting part of rehab.
Yeah.
What, when you say throwing, just to give everybody a taste of what that means, is it catch? Is it light toss? How is that? What is that defined as?
Very, very light catch, which seems extremely boring if you're anyone at all. But for me, putting the ball back in my hands is what I'm most excited about. So even though I'm going to be throwing like 12 miles an hour, it's going to be a lot of fun.
There are stages to these, especially a rehab like Tommy John. So for you, and as cerebral as you are, those mile markers, light toss,
yeah,
that's got to be a check mark where it makes you feel good and it's on to the next one.
Yep. Yeah, and so it'll be that, and then it'll be flat grounds, and then it'll be mound progressions, and then bullpens, and then games. You know, I have all those checkpoints or whatever you want to call them lined up, and I'm, you know, this is a big one for me because I feel like that's kind of the snowball effect. After that, everything will seem like it's going to just speed by.
Coming here to SoxFest, does this kind of like help you mentally, or is it kind of like, okay,
well, absolutely,
yeah.
I mean, that's why I decided to come this year. I mean, I had an option of coming or not coming because obviously I'm not going to play this year, but being around the fans and everything, the excitement kind of takes a little bit of anxiety away from me, because that's something that's a big part of, you know, not playing, is the anxiety and the depression that you go through. And being around this much excitement, fans that actually want to be around you, even though you're not playing, it kind of helps out.
Can you elaborate on that anxiety? Because I know you did something earlier this offseason where you talked about it, but you look at the crowd that's around you here. You are one of the marquee names that people have latched onto in this rebuild, and we saw what happened last year at the debut and how the fan response was then. So to hit that high and then to the low of the Tommy John, can you explain like what that does to, like, how you have to ride the roller coaster but not get wrapped up in it as well?
Yeah, I mean, a roller coaster is a good way to describe it, but it's been a crazy ride. 2018, I could say it was either the worst or greatest year of my life, and I could give you five different scenarios to prove to you either which way. But the fact that I had those lows and highs, I think, matures me. I think going through those scenarios to where you have to hit rock bottom, hit your peak, I think that matured me as far as my career goes, because I'm gonna have to deal with a lot more rock bottoms and a lot more peak highs. I mean, that's part of baseball, and that's part of Major League Baseball in particular. And you know, the fact that I got all of that out of the way in such a short amount of time, I think it's really going to help me in the future.
We were talking, I think it was the day you found out you needed the surgery, you were saying, at least you made it.
Yeah.
How much is that going to help you throughout this process?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people realize how important, like, just getting my feet wet was before, you know, I blew out. I was 2 weeks away from blowing out in AAA and having to wait a full year before even fighting for a job at the big league level. And kind of getting that experience, getting the energy of my debut, getting all of that out of the way, the butterflies and everything, and then getting the injury. I know there's no perfect time to get an injury, but that made it all almost okay in my mind. It's like, okay, now I have time to sit and kind of want to get back to where I just was. You know, I don't have to think about, fantasize about what it'll be like if I make it back and if I get to the big leagues. And, you know, it all kind of happened, and it put me in a, you know, a bright light, for even though it was short-lived.
It's been about 6 months since that major league debut. Now that you've had time to step back and kind of think about what that day was like, the whole moment, the phone call, but it was the highlight of the season, probably for most of these fans that, I mean, it was a tough season on the field, but everyone who's been following the minor league system knew that was a special day, and it was an electric day, and it was a special atmosphere. So 6 months-ish that have gone by, has it changed the way you thought about that day at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think I didn't realize in the time being, because, you know, I was trying to focus on pitching, even though, you know, you couldn't ignore the crowd that day. But I think it's given me time to realize how special our fan base really is. I mean, you had a crowd that day that would have thought, you know, was playoff caliber. It was unbelievable to think about. And for me, it was really heartwarming, because you know, I hadn't thrown a pitch in the major leagues yet, and I have all these supporters out there ready to watch me throw. It was a surreal experience. I mean, there was such a vibe in the stadium that day that I felt like all the pressure was off of me. Even though that sounds crazy with how many people were there, I felt like it kind of relieved everything because our entire team was so just involved. We all felt like we were in such a big game, even though realistically that game meant nothing, except for to me, you know. So I can't really put it into words, but the experience was unbelievable.
Do you have an answer as to why you have connected with Sox fans like that? Why they showed up in that way and were so excited to see you pitch?
No, not really. I mean, I try to interact as much as I can with you guys, but I know that there obviously is somewhat of a barrier between the player and fan relationship. But the fact that I've been shown nothing but support since I got traded over here, you know, it means a lot to me personally. And I know to Yo-Yo it does. And really everyone that's come over, we've all felt the same way. But I couldn't tell you why you guys like me so much, but I appreciate it.
You spent some time with Lucas Giolito. Actually, your whole off season, are you living together? How's this working?
Yeah, we were living together for about 3 months in LA, and he was doing, you know, his workouts and everything, and I was going through rehab, so we weren't really in the same routine. But every day we came home to each other, you know. We said hey, you know, cooked, hung out, whatever the case may be. You know, I got to kind of see how he lives his off season, and he got to see what, you know, my part of the rehab. But he's been through that part, you know.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring that up because Lucas had Tommy John surgery. Was that part of the reason why you guys kind of came together here?
It was a convenience factor, just both of us being out in LA. But the fact that, because I stayed with him and Max Fried as well from the Atlanta Braves. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys have had Tommy John surgery. And for me, with them both having very different paths in their rehab recovery, I think Giolito was back in 11 months, and Fried might have been back in like 16 or 18 months.
That's a big gap.
Yeah, so I got to see both ends of it. Like, for me, I would obviously love to be back in 11 months because that means I would get to pitch this season. I don't think that's going to happen.
Why don't you think that's going to happen?
I don't think that's my call.
Okay.
I'd be back right
but
now.
That's, but, you, but you understand that, though.
Yeah, no, I get it. And there's no point in rushing it, especially, you know, considering that even if I got back as fast as possible this year, I would get 3 starts, 4 starts, right, and then I'd have to shut right back down. There's really not much of a point of it. But I also got to talk to Fried about it, and he said he took the longer rehab, and he said he never felt better when he got back. And so, I mean, it's not, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever. It's what can I do to improve with this amount of time?
All right, sorry. I think I've got an idea. This is the timing of your injury might be the best timing.
Yeah.
Because you can't play this next year.
Right.
And then you have a whole off season that you wouldn't be able to play anyway. If it had happened where, okay, it's 11 months and it's April, you're going to be like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
It's the season.
Yeah.
And you probably wouldn't be as further along as you would be if you didn't have that whole off season after that.
Right. I mean,
what do you think about that theory?
I think you're exactly right. I mean,
thank you.
No, so yesterday I actually had a conversation. I can't even remember who I was talking to now. But there's no perfect time to get injured.
Right.
It sucks. There's no easy way around it. But say, like I said, say I would have got injured 2 weeks earlier. I'm in Charlotte, I'm in AAA, I don't get that big league experience. If I get injured 2 weeks later, the season's basically over. So, I mean, I would have had to wait and then probably would have found out I tore it in April or May or maybe even spring. Would have missed the whole season and then some of the next. There was not a more perfect scenario for me to get injured, even though the situation sucks. There's no way around it. But this was ideal timing.
We mentioned these mile markers that you're going to have to, you know, cross off as you go along. But does it help that you have Lucas Giolito, Dylan Cease, Nate Jones, and a handful of other guys that have had this procedure? They're
Absolutely.
Right here in your own clubhouse that you can reach out to at any point in the year.
Absolutely. And I think every one of them has been helpful in their own right. I'm working out with Nate down in Arizona right now. I've talked to Dylan quite a bit just because me and him are both kind of weirdos and like to meditate and stuff. I've talked to Giolito, obviously, because we lived together, right. And he'd been through it. So everyone that's gone through it has either reached out to me or talked to me about the situations that, you know, they had to deal with. Everyone's talked about there's a wall. You're going to feel like you don't feel like yourself anymore. Everyone's given me advice. I mean, it's been very smooth sailing for a rehab process. So it's not easy, but it seems easy.
All right, so it's June. It's July.
Yep.
It's August. You're going to be rehabbing. There's going to be a season going on. How are you going to deal with that mental part of it, knowing you can't play?
Yeah, I think that's the toughest part. It's not the rehab itself. It's the waiting. And I'm going to have to, you know, find hobbies, distract myself, you know, dedicate my craft to just being better, but not be caught up on the fact that I can't play this year. So I know that, you know, I think everyone that knows me, knows my personality, knows that I would like to be out there competing this year. But knowing that 2020 might be a much more important year for me, maybe a much more important year for the Sox. I don't know what we're going to do this year. I assume we're going to be a lot better than people realize. But, you know, just looking forward to that 2020 season, I think is going to be a key to my rehab. And not really focusing on what I'm missing out on, just what I could be achieving.
Because you meditate, you read, you listen to podcasts, how will that self-help awareness that you already have help you in June, July, and August when it's you're seeing what's happening, you know, 1,000 miles away?
Yeah, I think mental strength and just having a good mentality about anything is key in situations like this, where the anxiety and depression are bound to kick in. They're bound to take over. Being prepared for that by doing the self-help stuff, I think, will make all of this much more smooth sailing. I was talking to my girlfriend this morning, and I was like, my only motto for this year is positivity only. That's all I'm going to do, is be positive. Because, yeah, the situation sucks, and I'm not going to get to play this year, but wait a minute. I'm also a Major League Baseball player. I'm also in the greatest city in the world. You know, I've already lived all these things that almost all of you would love to live, I'm sure. So I don't have any right to complain. I'm in a very good position, even though it doesn't seem like it. And I feel like I'll be fine for the time off that I'm going to have.
And you're wearing a onesie.
And I'm wearing a onesie.
I mean, life's good.
Yeah.
Life's
How's
great.
It feeling, by the way?
It's pretty warm in this thing. So if you can get you one, stay cozy for the winter. I recommend it.
Yeah. You stuck up for one of your teammates who you haven't even met yet. I wanted to broach that with you. So John Jay, White Sox signed him, and Deadspin put out a story basically saying that the Sox signed a crappy player, and you said something back to Deadspin.
I'm glad you said crappy, because now I know what language I'm allowed to use. No, but that's over the line, ridiculous. And I don't know John. But I know my personality, and I know if I saw an article like that about myself, I'm going to be the last guy to be like, hey, don't talk about me that way. You know, you don't want to lash out, because then you seem like you're the player that's getting butthurt about what's being said about you. So I was like, wait a minute, I'll step in here. Even though he doesn't know me from Adam, I'm not going to even probably get to see him for most of this year. I thought I would say something and kind of try to break that up a little bit, because that's over the line, you know? And I don't know anything about Deadspin. They're probably going to write up an article about me or whatever. I don't care. And that's the thing, is frankly, I don't care what's said about me, but don't throw my teammates under the bus for clickbait or whatever the case may be. You know, like, we're human beings, even though a lot of times we don't seem like it.
That gets lost a lot, I think.
Yeah, I mean, especially a guy that's been around for a while, like John Jay. I mean, he becomes like a baseball icon instead of John Jay, the human being, you know? And again, he doesn't know me at all. I'll introduce myself to him in spring. We probably won't ever bring this up again, but the fact that, you know, there's articles like that that are allowed to be written, like there's things that we're not allowed to say as players because it makes us look bad, but then the media can say that about us and it's fine and we have to sit back and shut up. And I think that's where there needs to be a line drawn.
Do you guys talk about that amongst yourselves?
No, you're good. Yeah, good. Yeah.
Do you guys talk about that amongst yourselves, you know, as players, when you guys are portrayed or, I guess, written about unfairly in your minds?
And to parlay off that, you know, media, especially in 2019, is a soft word, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blogs and podcasts and Deadspin.
It's the whole gamut.
A soft word.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's true. Anyone with, you know, a social media account could be a media outlet now, you know? But yeah, we talked about that. I mean, we go through all this media training and we're, you know, we should say this or shouldn't say this. And that's what it is. You know, we want to be portrayed as good people too. We don't want to, you know, tick off the wrong people, but then we have to just allow what's written about us to kind of roll off our back.
Mm-hmm. How tough is that?
It's very tough. I've been on the butt end of plenty of bad reports. Just, you know, from my history, a failed drug test, a broken hand, you know, I've experienced that. I've never been written about as I'm a blank player or whatever, but I mean, it's tough, and it is over the line, and I feel like it needs to be handled, and I probably wasn't the one that should have tried to handle it, but it needs to be cut off there.
You cleaned up the garbage. It's okay.
Yeah.
Someone needed to do it. You did.
Yeah. You have friends in the game. You were in the Red Sox minor league system for a short time. The one thing that stood out to me about this group, covering you a couple years ago, and then kind of the next wave of guys, I just spent a week in the Dominican with that group, is the uniqueness of this group. And I'm curious, do other organizations have unique groups like this? When you talk to other people in the game, does this group stand out that you're currently in, this wave of White Sox talent?
I think the main difference is, and we all have our own personalities, obviously. We're all very different people. I mean, you can take me and Dylan and Giolito and think we're three of the strangest prospects you'll ever meet or whatever you want to call it. But we are a very positive group of, you know, prospects and players. We're just a very positive group because it's very easy as, you know, someone that spent 4.5 years in the minor leagues, it's very easy to be negative. I mean, you don't want to be, but you get caught up in the waiting game of, you know, maybe getting called up, maybe not getting called up, getting a promotion or whatever. But I think we're so optimistic because we know the potential we have. We have, you know, I don't know, I don't really follow the top 100 stuff. I just saw something about it on Twitter earlier, and I think we have like 5 or 6 guys.
Six, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be really good, and we know that. So no one's like, oh, I hope I make it.
Right.
Of the guys that we have, we know who's going to make it. And we know that we're probably going to be overflowed with talent anyway. So no one's dwelling about getting to the big leagues. They're just excited about when we do get there. So that's what's unique about our group.
How much does it help that you guys are all a group together? There's not just one. Like, I'll make a music analogy. There was the Beatles, who had each other through the craziness, and then there was Elvis, and there was just Elvis.
Right.
So if there was just one of you guys, you'd be taking so much of the pressure on. But the fact that you guys all have each other and you can share this experience together and talk it out, and you're coming up together, how much does that help?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I think anytime we talk about it, you can see someone's eyes light up because we're like, we can't wait. You know, we're so excited. But, I mean, for me, I got to live that already. Mm-hmm. And now I'm excited for Eloy, Dylan, and, you know, Dane, and everybody that's going to get that opportunity next, because I know that there's going to be just as much excitement as at their debuts as there was at mine. And then when we're all there, it's going to be like that all the time.
couple more minutes with Michael Kopech on the 200th episode of the White Sox Talk podcast. And we have Frankie here. One thing we like to do at Sox Fest is get a couple kids to ask a few questions. So Frankie has a question for Michael Kopech.
How many hours a day do you practice?
How many hours a day do I practice? Okay. That's a tough question, especially right now. no, but when I'm healthy, you know, I might spend 2 hours in the weight room, you know, an hour throwing, doing fielding practice, throwing a bullpen. Ultimately, as athletes, we're at the field from probably 1 o'clock in the afternoon until after the game, but we spend about 4 hours pregame practicing. So, I mean, and that's every day.
Your pregame is usually longer than the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we have David here. David has got a question.
Who was your favorite baseball player when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, even though I didn't get to see him pitch, I like that jersey, by the way.
He's wearing a Michael Kopech jersey for those listening.
Yeah, even though I never got to see him pitch, Nolan Ryan was my idol. That's actually why I wear 34. And me and my dad would sit and we would watch all of his no-hitters and everything together. But I didn't get to see him pitch personally, and that's like my biggest regret as a kid, even though he was done before I was even born. So,
speaking of 34, that was also Bryce Harper's number. I'm just sharing that. You've been having fun with that, by the way.
I've been picking a little bit about that. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, but I like to play GM in my head.
You have the 34. It's a tattoo, I believe, now, right?
Yeah, I got it tattooed on my wrist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There it is.
I got a chain that was given for Christmas from a girlfriend. So.
I want to ask you about your girlfriend, just the fact that she's an actress.
Yeah.
You've been kind of walking in the Hollywood life a little bit. How's that been like?
So it's much different than the baseball fame or whatever you want to call it. Her fan base is, and I mean this in a polite way because I know they will attack me as soon as I say something, insanely supportive. But insanely supportive.
Like too much, maybe? Over the top?
No, not over the top. Just anything she does, it's there. Anything.
Anything she does is, what do you mean, there?
Is for the world to see.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because somebody's watching. And we get told that all the time as athletes. Somebody's watching. Be careful of what you're doing. You know, don't do anything crazy. And to an extent, that's true. Somebody's always watching. But with her, literally, someone's always watching.
Like when she walks out of the house?
Someone's going to be there. It's unbelievable.
Is that tough?
I'm sure it's tough for her.
Yeah.
I kind of have fun with it.
you're the innocent bystander.
Yeah, I'll see somebody looking at her from across the way. I know that they're too shy to get her picture. And, hey, you want a picture? Yeah. No, I pick on her a little bit. But she enjoys it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last question I have for you, 2020. You're going through this Tommy John rehab. The goal doesn't change, or does the goal change?
As far as
your ultimate goal.
My ultimate goal.
Whether it's personal success on the mound, where you've always dreamt about and prepared to be. I know team success what your ultimate goal is. I know that.
Yeah.
But you, Michael Kopech, on the mound in 2020, when all this is behind you and you're a better pitcher because of it.
I'll give you my personal goal and my team goal. Because I know that my team goal is the same as all of yours. And if it's not, then some of us are in the wrong headspace. our team goal is to win a World Series in 2020. And I don't think that's been vocalized much, but I think everyone kind of knows that that's the year that we all want to win it. My personal goal, you know, even though I have all of, 14, 15 innings in the major leagues, my personal goal is to win a Cy Young. And I'm not saying that's going to be done right away. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I know that there are a lot of really great pitchers, but I just want to make sure my name's in that mix. You know, I don't want to count myself out. I don't want to fall short because of self-doubt. I want to put myself in that mix, and I think I'm capable of it, and I'm sure I'll come out better from this rehab. So a Cy Young and a World Series ring sounds pretty good in 2020.
Okay. Yeah. Sign, everybody like that?
Yeah, I think they're all nodding. Yes, yes, yes. Hey, thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe this summer, in that July, August time, we'll have you back on to kind of touch base and see how you're doing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And thanks for rocking the man of the word right here.
I'm allowed to keep this, right?
It's yours. You want
it. You want it. All
right, making sure.
Okay, and that's a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast, our 200th episode of the podcast. Brought to you by Winter Trust Community Bank, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to their webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast is over.